All right, it is the Redbird reboot. Hey, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. This is a podcast by Cardinals fans for Cardinals fans. We're here with our Niners preview this week. We have Steph Sanchez from, I believe it's at 49K, who's been on our show before. We've previously been the RTB pod. Now we've rebooted, at least, and so are the Arizona Cardinals. Steph, the Niners have not necessarily had to reboot. It feels like it's just been this Kyle Shanahan train that's been rolling and rolling. We wanted to get you on. First of all, how are you doing on a Saturday?
I'm doing good. Excited to be talking about this matchup for you as this or with you as the week has gone on. Like, to me, this has become more and more interesting, like, matchup, and I think the Cardinals are gonna give the 49ers some tough times, I think, but we'll talk about it. I just think it'll be an interesting matchup for the 49ers.
Yeah, divisional matchups always are interesting. The biggest thing I think that's different is expectations, because if you look at the San Francisco 49ers, the expectations have been Super Bowl or bust. You go and end up with an injured quarterback, unfortunately, in the NFC Championship game. And that ends up being the story of the offseason, is will Brock Purdy be healthy enough to play? Not only does he actually exceed most of those expectations, the Niners have continued to roll and are 3-0 currently right now. A lot of people are looking at them as that type of potentially the best team in the NFC, or at least right up there again with the Eagles. Meanwhile, the Cardinals entered this season. Everyone's like, all right, let's see. They want to tank for the number one pick. Let's see if they can get the number two pick. Let's just burn it all down. We'll see if there's anything that the coaching staff has. And through 3 weeks, they've been competitive and even upset the Dallas Cowboys a week ago, something that I don't think anyone really picked, including us. I picked the Cardinals to cover the spread, but not to outright beat the Cowboys. How do 49er fans view the Cardinals right now as having those high expectations versus a team that really entered this season with no expectations whatsoever?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely through these first three games, the Cardinals have exceeded those expectations, right? Even from the 49ers fan standpoint. And so I think we're, as fans, going into this game with some respect for the Cardinals and what they're doing. And unlike the Cowboys, the 49ers can't go into this game and overlook the Cardinals, right? Like, I do feel like part of what the Cowboys did was definitely overlook them and think that they were going to just be able to sleepwalk through that game and come away with a win. But as we saw, that didn't happen. And I mean, honestly, if you had seen, or if they had seen, like, the first two games the Cardinals played, they played the Commanders and the Giants very tough. And they probably should have won those games, right? Like, they very well could have. So the Cowboys just kind of screwed the pooch on that. But I think the fact that, you know, the Cardinals were able to beat the Cowboys like they did, I don't think there's any excuse for the 49ers to say that, you know, they didn't know that this would also be a pretty hard-fought matchup.
Absolutely. Now, Marcos, Cardinals fans and Niners fans, we've got a long history, especially with Niners taking over State Farm Stadium. This is a road game this year. It's always been considered to be a different place to play. What do you think as far as when you have the Niners from a Cardinals fan perspective, whether it's the fans or just the team that you see as far as what we expect when the Niners and the Cardinals play each other?
It's just that rivalry that we have every single year, every single time we have the 49ers come into town or we go in and visit them, it's always a toss-up of who's going to win the matchup. There was a situation where we thought the 49ers were just, you know, laying down and, you know, that was going to be a win for us. And it becomes what happened in 2020 late in the season when the 49ers had nothing to play for. And they were playing in State Farm Stadium away and completely came away with the win against the Cardinals. So, as far as, like, the matchup is concerned, there's always a toss-up when it comes to it. And we always got to expect that they're always going to play up to their best capabilities on both sides of the ball. I mean, it could go either way. It could be competitive, or it could be just like last year when they went to Mexico City and it was just a manslaughter. So, well, yeah, we'll see how it turns out. But I think this team, as you've seen, the Cardinals are playing competitive football.
Yeah, no, I think that's something that's really important to look at, because when we entered this season, it was either disaster class or, hey, they're going to lose a lot of games. But they're at least going to be having what you call the moral victories, where it feels like you fought hard. They're able to turn that into a actual victory last week. Marcos, we've had some more time to look at and break down the film. Steph, let's talk a little bit at least, too, about why the Cardinals went out and were able to beat the Cowboys. I know we talked a little bit about it before we hopped on the air. How much of this was the Cardinals going out and winning, and how much of this was like the Cowboys just blew it? There's kind of a little bit of a different discussion, especially nationally. Almost every person has said, oh, Cowboys blew the game, and only a few people, I think, online have actually seen how good Arizona played in that game.
Yeah, exactly. I do think it's probably a little of both. Like, you can tell the Cowboys just weren't really playing their best game from the start. But at the same time, like, you do have to give credit to the Cardinals for what they were able to do. And I think they really won this game on the ground first and foremost, and that the run game has been very successful for the Cardinals so far. So when I'm looking at this matchup for the 49ers, like, I'm thinking they have to stop that first, right? And it's easier said than done, because, like, I actually saw a stat that, like, James Conner has just 87 less yards than Christian McCaffrey this season. And McCaffrey's the leading rusher in the league right now, right? So you wouldn't exactly think those two guys would be as close, but they are. And I think it just speaks to, you know, what Cardinals are doing on offense, and that is running the hell out of the football, and they're doing a great job at it. Against the Cowboys, I saw they averaged 7 yards per carry, right? And I watched that game, and they were blocking, you know, the hell out of, you know, the Cowboys. And that's what made it so successful, along with, like, the zone read. The Cowboys had a difficult time with that, which was kind of surprising to me because, again, like, it just seemed like they were unprepared, because they should have at least some experience with that, given, like, going up against, you know, the Eagles and all that. So, yeah, it just seemed like they were really unprepared. But it is a legit threat as well. And so the 49ers, I think, have to be disciplined in stopping that, because it isn't just James Conner. It's Joshua Dobbs who can run the football as well. And we saw him, you know, gash the Cowboys too for a very big play. It's Rondell Moore who also, like, gashed the Cowboys on a big play, and they're lining him up everywhere. So it's going to take all the 11 guys on the 49ers defensive side of the ball to, you know, really play disciplined football and be on the same page. And so it could be done, but it is certainly easier said than done.
Hey, Steph. So I'm not going to hide this, but I have been a big Bosa fan ever since he was coming out in the 2019 draft, I believe. But, you know, obviously we didn't draft Nick Bosa. And of course, there goes that quote that Steve Keim had mentioned, saying that Bosa had put his arm around, like, him and Cliff Kingsbury are, like, headlocking him, yeah, saying, like, I know who you're going to draft, but if you draft that short little quarterback, I'm just going to make your life a living hell. So, yeah, like, just seeing him ascend to being the defensive player of the year last year, and just ever since his rookie season, becoming one of those top-notch, like, elite-type pass rushers and whatnot, he affects the game so well. And he has, like, this style of being able to, like, pass rush, where he just, like, gets so low to the ground and puts himself in a position where he's, like, about to, like, line up at the blocks and attract me and whatnot. So it's just the technique is incredible. So since that situation has happened with the 49ers and they extended him, of course, they gave him they made him the highest paid defensive player in the history of the Cardinals. Do you think your team is the same without him?
No. And I think they know that, right? Like, that's why they extended him for, you know, all the money that they did. And I truly feel they felt he was worth that in the end. He does transform, you know, this defense. Like, if you see the numbers of this defense, like, without him, and they lose games without him. Like, those are stats you can look at. And yeah, there's no such thing as edge wins, just like, you know, there's no such thing really as QB wins. But, you know, and Nick Bosa definitely is, like, a huge piece of the puzzle of the 49ers' success on defense. And, like, currently he's getting double teamed, I think, the most out of any, like, edge rusher, 37%, I believe. And he's still, like, productive is a thing. Like, he's still getting pressure and you know, making things happen despite, like, he only has one sack on the season, right? But he's still making game-changing plays. It might not always show up on the stat sheet, but, you know, he is disrupting things for quarterbacks. So that's all you can ask for, honestly, from a pass rusher, and he's doing that, as well as, like, some of the other guys on the defensive line who certainly benefit from Bosa being as good as he is and taking up as much attention as he is as well. As I mentioned, like, all the double teams, that just opens things up for other guys on the defensive line. Example, Javon Hargrave, and, you know, some of those other guys on the edge as well.
Yeah, did you guys ever, like, were you guys scared about him holding out?
Yeah, I mean, that came, like, really uncomfortably close to week one, and he ended up playing in the game, but it wasn't ideal, right? Like, the fact that he wasn't ready to go or, like, in football shape week one. Of course, you still end up, you know, winning those games, and now it seems like he's fine, so it's all water under the bridge. But, yeah, it was getting, you know, worrisome. I think we all knew that it would happen, but it was a matter of when, and because that when was just getting so close to the start of the season, that's when I was like, oh, like, we can't afford to lose games while this is still going on, right? So ultimately they got it done, and I think, again, like, all water under the bridge now.
Yeah, the biggest one I know when it comes to players as far as for being impact players, Nick Bosa is up there. This is the defensive player of the year. A guy who, the biggest question coming out wasn't how good he was going to be, but more about he missed some games at Ohio State, and health was an area we saw. Without him on the field, things were rough. This year, he's off to a solid and healthy start. I believe currently he's not, like, on the same sack total and pace, but we know sacks can usually come in bunches as far as it goes. And the Niners have actually played, surprisingly, a couple of teams that would be, I think, from a year ago, a playoff team, at least, in the Giants. The biggest story, I think, has ultimately been the Brock Purdy conversation. Because a lot of people are asking, hey, Brock Purdy, how much of it you think of the Niners? Everyone would always talk about, oh, the Niners have got Debo. They have Ayuk has kind of come into his own. You've got George Kittle. They added Christian McCaffrey. You've got at least a little turnover on the offensive line, but Trent Williams, still a stalwart there. The biggest question has at least been, is Purdy good? Or is Purdy a guy who's being carried? And I've kind of been of the opinion of watching him that there's going to be a bit more high variance than a Jimmy Garoppolo type who is there. There's not going to be the same sort of explosive playmaking that you would normally see some of these running quarterbacks or guys who, you know, have, like, the right arm of Zeus throwing lightning bolts. But he's gotten to be aggressive in the right places and the right circumstances, to a point where by having a good defense as far as Niners, and maybe even an elite one from what we're at least seeing so far, he's basically been able to lead the Niners to higher scores overall, not just by, like, taking risks, but by being able to get out of some of these sacks in places that Jimmy Garoppolo would either throw it at someone's feet or just would end up taking a sack. The biggest thing, I think, at least, is how sustainable do you feel like it is with Brock Purdy because he doesn't have the physical traits? Or are we kind of talking about a situation where we probably need to accept that Brock Purdy is better than people think, and as a seventh round pick, the expectations, he may get better over time. That's something that I think a lot of people are trying to measure right now when it comes to the Niners because of those high Super Bowl aspirations.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's the latter. We're all kind of waiting for the shoe to drop with Brock Purdy, right? Like, at what point is he going to hit his floor? Like, I don't know if we've really seen the floor, and if we have, like, it's a pretty high floor. Because if you look at what he did against the Giants last week, that would probably be one of his worst games. Like, if you just look at how he struggled in the first quarter against the blitz and all that, but by the end of it, it's like, oh, this might actually be one of his better games, actually, because he got blitzed, like, nearly 85% of the time, and he ended up dicing them up, 310 yards, 2 touchdowns. So I think the thing with Purdy is, like, if he's struggling in a game, he could adjust and get in a rhythm in that same game. And I don't know if a lot of quarterbacks are able to do that. And I don't know if it's this thing with him and Kyle where, you know, they look at things on the sideline. It's like, okay, we're going to adjust and do this now. It very well could be. So he's certainly benefiting from that. But I think, like, you can see it. Like, he has the guts to play the position. Like, it's so funny because you, Blake, shared that video of the Cardinals doing this, like, weird, like, they're all moving around in the defensive formation. They're not even set. They're just, like, doing all this thing. And Dak just looked so rattled. And did they end up calling a timeout on that one?
Yeah, they called a timeout on that play. And it wasn't even that, I think, Dak, as far as rattled, part of it, too, is it looked like their offensive line had no idea where anyone was going to come from, too. And it was one of those places where, like we said, we're looking at this going, I think that's a 1-2-8 where they have one down defensive lineman. They had Dennis Gardeck, their pass rusher. He's lined up over in the slot, but he's showing blitz. So now all of a sudden you're like, that is crazy. Because, like, you don't want to put that guy in the slot, but when he's showing blitz, then you realize, okay, either he runs with a free shot at the quarterback and the quarterback has to hit the hot. But if for whatever reason he drops back and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I just didn't see that coming, that you were going to actually drop him back into coverage. Suddenly then you got to clutch the ball so that you're not throwing it right to where the defender is. They were also down in that game because Jonathan Ledbetter, who's not playing this week, he's been their best defensive lineman. He was a guy that when he left the field due to injury, they just have had all of these injuries to the defensive line. And it wasn't like it was a strength coming into the season. There's not a single household name on that defensive line. And really, when they lost him, it was like, we're just going to kind of have to throw something out there to be able to confuse Dak, because we've got one defensive lineman that we can play. We're trying to get the other rookie who's there a little bit of rest so we can rotate him back in. They were able to get the timeout called. And you can at least say that the Cardinals, for one reason or another, they just have not been a talented team coming into the year, but they're a well-coached team. And like you said, the difference, I think, in between the Mike McCarthy, Dak Cowboys, and this Kyle Shanahan machine that we've seen, this is probably a significant enough difference to the point where, you know, if the Niners were missing three offensive linemen like last week, you probably would be a little different. But it does seem that this is one of the places where you're probably looking at more of what the future of this rivalry could look like. And I think the more question we're going to ask is, could the Cardinals cover the spread versus what it would take to win? Marcos will ask a little bit here about what it's going to take to be able to win or how he'd attack the Niners. But what do you feel like is the outcome for San Francisco fans that they would want in this game?
You're asking me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, you know, obviously a win. And I think that's like what we're expecting in this game, right? Like, if you look at the talent on paper, the 49ers probably should be every team on the schedule. And so, yeah, I think this is no different. I do want to see the 49ers come out and be focused because, again, like, they're coming off a 10-day rest. Sometimes, you know, maybe you could start slow with that. But at the same time, again, because you saw what the Cowboys did or didn't do against this Cardinals team, like, that should be a warning to this team that, you know, you can't really go into it and just overlook this opponent and think you could just, you know, sleepwalk and score 30 points like you have in the previous weeks. And so, yeah, I think they'll be, you know, more focused. I think on offense, it wouldn't surprise me if we saw some of the game plan that, you know, maybe Kyle Shanahan had planned for the NFC Championship game coming to fruition for this one. I know Gannon isn't calling, you know, the defensive plays, but it's more or less like the same scheme, right? So I think some of that
it's a little bit different. Confused. They're running a 3-4, and they're running a very different style than, like, the, you know, drop back 7 into coverage, rush 4. Some of it is because they're still running a lot of cover 2, which is what the Gannon defense had ultimately been. They're just more disguising it with pre-snap looks, which is part of where when you got a quarterback like Purdy who's still younger, it's going to end up turning into more of the Kyle Shanahan seeing what the defense is doing and then finding the different weaknesses to expose it, I think. And part of that, I think, is going to be in running the football on this Cardinals team. But there's at least different ways I think we can – yeah.
Yeah, like, I think that'll be the game plan. And that kind of has been the game plan for the 49ers in, like, the first few games where it's, like, I don't want to say playing a vanilla offense to start, but, like, you know, they do kind of try certain things to see how it's defended. and then they kind of go from there and make adjustments, you know, by the half. So I do expect that, but I do expect they'll come out and try to run the football a ton, because I know that has kind of been the weakness of the Cardinals defense. They're sixth in yards allowed on the ground. So Christian McCaffrey is going to be a pretty like tough opponent, I think, for the Cardinals, especially like if you guys are missing, you know, some defenders, as you mentioned. And so also I think the tackling is going to be a big thing for the Cardinals, which has been a struggle I saw in a couple of these games. So yeah, they're going to test that right away. And even if Debo's not out there, right? Like I think it'll be reason to, for the 49ers to use McCaffrey, maybe even a little bit more, maybe out of the backfield, maybe they split them out wide, right? Like we could see more of that in this game. I also think the one involved Brandon Ayuk and Kittle, a lot more in this one. They'll probably get more targets. Kittle has had some big games against the Cardinals in the past. I know in the last year he had two touchdown games in both of those matchups against the Cardinals last year. But I do also I've brought up the fact that like it is slightly a different defense. There's different personnel there, so you know I'm not making any bets that Kittle is going to have a two touchdown game again. But you know, just to say that some of these guys, I think you could find some favorable matchups for those two guys. So,
all right. So I wanted to show a little Kyle Shanahan concept. This is courtesy of Alex Rollins, who runs his own YouTube channel. He puts up all these Kyle Shanahan like plays of the week and stuff. And this was his most recent one.
Nice.
I got ugly handwriting. I get that, but yeah, it's fly double RT clamp. So, of course, you know, the dotted sections are just the motions. And, of course, the adjustment by the, I believe this is the Y receiver. This is the X receiver right here. He's just running. I mean, he's the opposite side of where the play side is called. Technically speaking, it's the field side. So I just wanted to throw that out there because I watch his channel quite a bit. And I learned a lot of, like, the concepts. With this Kyle Shanahan offense, that's basically somewhat of what the Cardinals are running ourselves, because of the fact that like that type of philosophy plus the type of like play design is what we're supposed to be trying to iterate for ourselves. Because for maybe four years now, like we've been wondering what would Kyler Murray look like in that type of offense. Let's just say the Cardinals drafted Nick Bosa and the 49ers drafted like Kyler Murray. Like, what would he have looked like in a Kyle Shanahan offense? Being under center, using his legs, going out in motion, moving the pocket, being able to, like, throw things like bootleg, like run plays like bootlegs. And, of course, like, all these concepts that we think about that we're like, yeah, we don't run that type of offense. We're very static. We were static for, like, about 2 to 3 years, not using much pre-snap motion. We were also putting him in the back of the pocket. That could be debated whether it's the coach or the quarterback, because it does come down to a comfort thing. Plus the height is one of those factors, but putting him under center would have actually helped him out when it came to protection, because of the fact that if he's lining up 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage and that ball gets, once that ball gets snapped, he's taking another two to three steps, maybe even 5 steps, like further back. So he's now 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage. You have these edge rushers who are lining up super wide. It's called the wide nine technique. They're lining super wide outside of the tackles or tight end shoulders, whatever is the furthest protector. And at that point, they're just running a straight line towards the quarterback, and he's forced to come back in the pocket, where if the middle of the pocket's collapsing, his vision's completely gone. So from under center, the ball's getting snapped. He's probably like 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage, but those tackles now have a better angle to help protect with those edge rushers. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out this year. But we are going off of that same type of philosophy and concept, and I can't wait to see how the 49ers plan to defend this, especially since they know what the concepts are.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Steve Wilks has done a pretty good job so far this year. I know there's some bad blood as well with the Cardinals. He's got that lawsuit and everything. So whether that plays a factor, I don't know. But, you know, so far the 49ers defense has been, like, you know, technically sound and all of that. The one thing I would worry about is, like I mentioned before, like, they have struggled against, like, mobile quarterbacks. And this isn't Kyler Murray, but I think Joshua Dobbs has, like, shown enough to be considered a mobile quarterback and a threat to run. And he can gash you if you're not careful, right? So that's kind of what I'm more worried about in this matchup and defending the zone read, because, like, that takes a lot of discipline as well. And that'll freeze defenders, right? Like, I do think that part of what affected the Cowboys defense so much was that, like, I saw a clip where their linebackers, just for like a second or two or milliseconds, but, you know, you're watching in slow motion, or like you're watching the clip back and it looks like a lot of time, right? And in football, it is a lot of time. If you can just, like, freeze a defender for like half a second, like, that's enough that he's behind the eight ball already, and you got a guy running, you know, to the outside, and he's got a nice gain now. So I think for the 49ers, yeah, they need to play discipline. And I would, what they've been doing lately is five down linemen, and I wonder if we see that more in this one. They've been having Javon Kinlaw out there and those obvious passing downs. That has been pretty successful through the, like, first 2 weeks. They ran it, you know, a bit against the Giants last week. And so I wonder if we do see that a little bit more in this one. I also think the benefit of that, too, is that because you have one extra guy in there, you potentially help clog up any, like, rushing lanes that may open up, too, as you're trying to, like, rush the passer. So I think it has, like, a couple of benefits to running that. But, like, I do think the 49ers as well have had, like, their secondary is a lot better than it was last year. They're limiting explosive plays. And the Cardinals had a ton of explosive plays against the Cowboys just last week. I think they had eight, and they had eight the week before that. So they're getting these really big plays. But the 49ers have done a good job limiting them. And so that's why I say, like, this matchup is so interesting to me, because, like, it's like a team that's doing a good job at defending all of this, and then on the other side you have a team that's doing a good job at doing all of that. So it's like there's a lot of those things in this matchup that are going to come to a head, and it's really just going to be a matter of who's going to execute a little bit better. Like, the other thing I notice is the Cardinals defense and the 49ers defense has had they've gotten an interception in each of their first three games. But Purdy and Dobbs are the only one of only four quarterbacks who haven't thrown an interception yet this year, right? So who's going to get the interception in this game? I do think one of these defenses is going to get an interception in this one, and whoever does probably going to win the game, right? Like, those are those, like, momentum shifting plays, and in a matchup like this could make all the difference. So just, like, the really interesting things that I've kind of, like, tracked in this matchup.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree, because next talking point I wanted to get to was how Arizona can essentially attack San Francisco's offense. And when you look at, it's not quite bringing a knife to a gunfight. It's that you're more bringing, I think, a need to have Brock Purdy turn the ball over, essentially, because this is a Niners team that's able to run effectively, that has Christian McCaffrey. I think a lot of what Arizona did last week in emptying out some of their playbook is something that teams will be able to adjust to. And when you look at, like, part of where they got the explosive plays from, there wasn't just a busted coverage, just saying that it was all on the Niners. Some of it was about the angles. Like you talked about, the linebackers were in conflict. One of the big plays that they had to Rondale Moore, they had him line up in the backfield, essentially had no running back on the field, five wide receivers. Moore takes the handoff, and they're able to get a lineup of a safety matched up onto the left guard, kind of with that counter pull that, you know, Kyle Shanahan has used for years and years to be able to spring people. And Moore just runs off. The safety takes a bad angle, and he's gone 45 yards to the house. When you see some of that on tape and can look at some of where the explosive plays come from, I think you look at the Niners and can say that they could run that same play for a Christian McCaffrey without having to then take a running back off of the field. You could then get Kyle Juszczyk matched up. Like, it's one of those places where in the NFL there's going to be kind of ebbs and flows when it comes to the talent. But for the most part, the coaching is going to be pretty consistent. And that's something that I think if the Cardinals are here, you'll really want to make sure that you can set up Josh Dobbs for success. That may involve some screens, a little bit maybe of trickery. then you'll have to be able to try to find a way to get pressure on Brock Purdy. I think the Cardinals will try to mix it up overall at the line of trying to see if they can fool him into, you know, making one of these different passing plays, try to see if they can bait him into a pick. That's going to come with a bit of risk involved. I think it'll be really interesting to see Shanahan's approach, because if I'm Kyle, I just look at the Cardinals and I say, all right, this is a team that is sixth worst against the run. We've got a top three running defense so far in the NFL as far as yards per game. The turnover differential is very similar for these two teams. Let's go ahead and just run the ball on this Cardinals team that can't really stop the run and not have to worry about putting Purdy into some of those situations. Then if you end up in a spot where you're able to get some turnovers by having to have Josh Dobbs throw the ball a whole bunch, to me, that seems like it should favor the Niners, to the point where, unless you see like three interceptions for Brock Purdy and the Cardinals are able to, you know, rush for over 100 yards with James Conner by being able to get it, it really does feel like that's the only way the Cardinals could win this game, is by seeing an unlucky game from Brock Purdy. Otherwise, I think the question we would have is, can the Cardinals go out and cover? Because it is a huge spread that we've seen, with the Niners being two touchdown favorites. I think that we can all at least agree probably that we're not going to see the same mistakes from this Niners team that we saw the Cowboys make last week. But I don't know, Steph, we've always seen the Niners for some reason or another be in closer games than it seems like they should be, despite the talent. And yet they usually have come away with a win.
Yeah, I think like in these first three games, the first half, they kind of start slow and they do have trips to the red zone, but they just don't. You know, they don't convert in the end zone for whatever reason. So, yeah, you know, you end up kicking some field goals and things like that. And so I think like the closest, they start off slow, but like, I think they make adjustments as the game goes on. And that's when they really start to pull away from other teams. Like if you've watched any of the other like 49er games, but here's the other thing that's interesting. I noticed that the Cardinals are a really good first half team. And actually, the 49ers and the Cardinals are averaging the same amount of points in the first half, 18 points.
Crazy.
And so, if you look at that and you, like, to me, if the 49ers can go into this game at halftime and it be close or tied, like, I'd feel pretty good about that. Because the Cardinals, to this point, have had a pretty tough time getting a lot of points in the second half, right? So it kind of seems like teams are adjusting, or maybe like the Cardinals aren't adjusting. I don't know. Maybe you could shed some more light on what's going on in the second half compared to the first. But if I'm the 49ers, I'd feel good about it being a close game in the first half. You know, maybe you give up some, you know, plays that make you a little, or make fans a little uncomfortable, like, oh, this game's too close. But I do think that they'll probably be able to pull away in the second half after adjustments on both sides of the ball.
What's been happening in the second half is they've gone very conservative on both sides of the ball, on offense and on defense. That's what happened against the Giants. After having that lead and whatnot, they were trying to burn off as much clock as they possibly could. But the problem was that playing that type of a game, if the defense from the Giants, which eventually did wake up, and you know, having big Dexter Lawrence be the powerhouse that he is in the middle, just completely started shutting down all those runs, forcing us to have to do things like throwing the ball instead of throwing the ball downfield. It was more so like just chip shots to the outside. And it, unfortunately, like the offense couldn't convert on third downs in the second half when you needed them to. And as for the defense, they started playing more of a, so they were being adjusted on when it came to, remember Blake, you pulled up that stat from Brett Coleman, it mentioned something about like, I think 80% of the quarters in the first half. So in the second half, they went totally adjusted by attacking that middle part of the field. And in quarters coverage, you have that middle field open part. Mm-hmm. So of course they came out with that big explosive play to attack that very spot in the middle where the safety came down. Instead of staying where he was supposed to stay disciplined at the top of his own quarter area and stuff, and he came down, so that left that vacant. Marco Wilson was expecting help over the top, he didn't get it. So I mean,
he's beat off of the line.
And
so that's the other thing about the corners.
Yeah, and after they attacked our corners, like profusely that game, especially Marcus Wilson. They didn't have that. He didn't have a very good game. Ketrell Clark has been playing really tough, but he got picked on that game too. So those were the instances that happened. That in itself didn't happen against the Dallas Cowboys, because they were trying not to be conservative in that. They knew if they were going to win this game, they had to step on the throw and just continue to push it down to the, like, keep going as far as like accelerating and not slowing down. So they couldn't shift down. They had to keep shifting up and keep the intensity that high. And eventually it came into a win. If that's going to be the case for this game, for one, just like you mentioned, Steph and Blake, our run defense hasn't been good, and hasn't been good for like years now. And that was the key for the 49ers to beat the Cardinals. I'd always mentioned every single time before we faced the 49ers, I said, if we don't stop the run, this is just going to be a manslaughter, because just like it happened last year, we couldn't stop the run in the second half, and it was just done. The Cardinals couldn't do anything. So we need to do what we need to do to be able to like stop the run, whether it's like stacking the box, and then we're going to have to be extra reliant on the coverage on the back end to be able to hold up. There's news about Deebo Samuel possibly not playing. I'm not sure if that's going to be the case, but Ayuk is still Brandon Ayuk. So those one-on-ones are going to be very important on the outside to put Brock Purdy, who is a, you know, Arizona native, Phoenix native, playing the team that he grew up watching, and like he's a Kurt Warner like fan and whatnot, so he has ties to us. He's gonna have a chip on his shoulder as well.
Yeah, that's another thing with this matchup too. I feel like there's a couple of chips on shoulders. I already mentioned like the Steve Wilkes one. I think like the fact that, you know, Kyle had, you know, a game plan in the NFC Championship that he wasn't exactly able to like execute against like Jonathan Gannon. Like, I feel like some of that, I also hope that at some point Kyle has seen that video of Jonathan Gannon on his way to the, to that game saying, we're going to gut these guys. And I just want,
fire in that gut, you know, gut those guys, have fire in your gut. That's just a Gannon, you know, the I think we call him a Gannon the Goober sometimes. He's got very Kendall Roy energy, or like Dennis on Salt. Dennis and It's Always Sunny. What's funny is that he can like recruit a staff. Like, we've said nothing but good things since they came in about Drew Petzing as a coordinator. They've actually done well. And I think part of why they've really struggled in the second half, outside of the first two games, I think we agree it was, we don't have a lot of trust with this quarterback who just got here 10, you know, 17 days ago. They were up against the Giants, and then what really shifted was the quarters coverage not only got exposed, but the report / rumor / whatever you want to call it from Justina Anderson was Brian Daboll took over play calling in the second half and really started using Daniel Jones' legs, which started pulling some pressure on Arizona's linebackers, which then led to taking those over-the-middle plays against that quarters coverage. They were able to also run the ball because you had two running threats. And then on that big play that opened up the half to their rookie wide receiver out of Tennessee, whose name escapes me for now, but I'll remember it, I'm sure, in a second, Hyatt. They had Buda Baker out. He's on IR for the last few seasons. They had Andre Shashera in, and you're realizing, okay, that even though the Cardinals have still been able to get a win or do well, you can see the impact of a Buda Baker in terms of not being able to give up big plays. Dallas attacked their corners in the second half and were able to be effective running the ball with Rico Dowdle, where Arizona really struggled to tackle in the middle of the field. And I do honestly think that Arizona, they were able to adjust, but it's almost like that one boxer that when you kind of lose a couple rounds at first, because he comes out and is hitting you, he's aggressive, you're not quite expecting it. You go back to the coach and he goes, hey, like, watch whenever he lines up for that one left jab, because he's never, ever going to follow up with another left jab. He always goes for the right. And teams have been able to find that counterpunch. And Arizona just doesn't have the athletes or the players, I think, where they come out with a great game plan. They're able to expose a team's weaknesses. They really haven't had that counterpunch in the second half, either to get it or to be able to stop teams. Even in the Cowboys were able to kind of stop themselves by taking five trips to the red zone, kicking it from the 4-yard line. And then, of course, that game-ending interception where, you know, Dak was probably expecting someone to run into the middle of the field. Instead, you see Kaiser White kind of reads his eyes, drops in, gets that interception. There's only 4 minutes left in Arizona. It's able to walk away with a win. I think that's one of the places where you can say that the Cardinals are a well-coached team, but you can at least see the talent disparity that really pops up, I think, in the second half of games. And I think that's something that, unfortunately, has been consistent, even going back to last year's Niners game in Mexico City, going back to the end of the year where it's like, hey, J.J. Watt had 2 sacks and we're all applauding him. Meanwhile, you know, Brock Purdy is just like getting like a 300-yard passing game without actually having a high yards per attempt. So I think someone, I don't remember who it was, but someone called that like the privileged quarterback offense. And it's like, oh, for years, we finally have like, you know, the Cardinals and Niners are both running like that type of offense where you're able to see guys get open on sail routes or are able to at least adjust. I'm honestly excited more, I think, at least for seeing where the Cardinals stand up in this measure. And I feel like the Cardinals would be more of a trap game or a threat if they hadn't beaten the Cowboys last week, unfortunately. Yeah, the fact that they have, I think, is probably part of why I've picked the Niners to be in this game. And we can go into score predictions, I think, at least here, Steph. What do you have as far as the Niners and what this game will play out for the most part? And then if you've got time, at least I know Marcos and I will be able to for sure look at some standout plays, and then we'll be able to kind of get us out of here today. But let's get the score predictions in. What do we think the Cardinals do? And could they go 4-0 against the spread, even if they don't win this game?
Yeah, I'm going with 34-16. That's what I've been given this week. And I think part of that is because like the 49ers have scored 30 points in each of their games. And, you know, you can argue the 49ers haven't even played their best game yet. They're still leaving points out on the field. So I think they'll improve a little bit, maybe, you know, convert a little bit better in the red zone. So I give them 34. As far as the 16 for the Cardinals, like I do think they're going to, you know, start hot early, which, you know, maybe that means a touchdown and maybe a field goal in the first half or something like that. But I do ultimately think that in the second half, because it's not just the Cardinals and the fact that they haven't scored much in the second half, it's the 49ers defense and what they've been limiting teams to in the second half. So I think, you know, they'll probably cap them at just about that. And if you look at the Cardinals offense, you know, they're averaging 24 points a game. And their defense is allowing 22.3 points per game. The 49ers offense is, as I mentioned, they're scoring 30 points a game, and their defense is allowing just 14 points a game, right? So if you look at those things, I kind of feel like that score prediction is pretty fair just based on what we've seen so far. But, like, also, it's early in the season. I don't think we really know what this Cardinals team – who they are yet. We've seen some really good things from them, but like Gannon got really lucky that he's been able to play like NFC East teams first 3 weeks of the season. I'm curious what it's gonna look like, you know, this week against the 49ers.
Definitely. I think it's similar to your terms. He's got his 27-24 where they're able to keep it. I know we've got another commenter who's talking about 28-21 Niners win with go cards. I'm in that weird place of, all right, Cardinals have been 3-0 against the spread. At some point, you feel like that this team shouldn't actually be able to go that much against the spread competitively. But every week I've picked against them to not be able to pick up the spread, they've actually gone out and covered it. So I think that if the Cardinals are going to do that, it would have to be something like a 33-20, but would be with a late backdoor cover, like a garbage time touchdown, which whenever I then say I'll predict that to cover, it means they won't. So that's part of where it's just one of those spots of like, all right, it's Murphy's Law. Whatever can go wrong can go wrong. I'll still go with until they at least are, it's like kind of the, hey, you've been able to cover the spread thus far. I do have both quarterbacks turning the ball over once in this game. I do think that that's something if you're someone who's got props, and I have the kickers going on the over in this game, just from what we've seen thus far. I think the big thing ultimately is we're going to end up seeing maybe a close game through the half, and then the Niners get a long Christian McCaffrey, either touchdown or run, and then are able to pull away with more and more pressure, and then maybe Arizona ends up not going as well. So I've got it as 33-20. Would not be shocked at all if we end up talking about the Cardinals scoring much less than 20 points. I think they would have to score that backdoor in order to cover where it's kind of a garbage time, meaningless touchdown. Not quite the Kyle Shanahan kick to be able to kind of have that as far as the points go, but that's it I have. Steph, if you want to head out, you can. Otherwise, Marcos, we've got some plays that we wanted to be able to go over, at least for the most part, for everything here. Thanks again so much for joining us. Go ahead and plug yourself.
Appreciate you guys. Yeah, I am Steph49K with PH Steph, on all social media platforms, so TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, all of it, YouTube. I do 49 Carrots podcast, talk about the 49ers, have daily shows every weekday, and of course, post games. So, yeah, thanks for having me, guys. This is going to be a great matchup. I think it's going to be a fun game. So, really excited for it and hope you guys enjoy the game.
Thank you, Steph. We appreciate you having you on.
Bye bye.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
See ya. Yeah. Marcos, let's hope that it's a fun game for Cardinals fans, because if it's a fun game for 49ers fans, we all know what that means as far as the end result's going to be.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and get into some football stuff. I think you may have some plays that are there ready. I've got a little bit of just some of the Niners, how they attacked the Giants last week in a way that was a little bit different from the Cardinals, at least. But if you want to get some of those plays pulled up in the background, and it's interesting, at least. I think you have the Cardinals being a lot closer. I think if the Cardinals end up being that much closer, that is a huge win for Arizona, because it would essentially mean that you're playing the Niners, one of the better teams in the league, hard. And then whether win or lose, it's like, you know, you're not able to maybe win like last week, but you're able to at least argue that this team is trending in the right direction.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I actually did it in a way where I said 27-4, as in like either team is going to end up like scoring that much. So it could be the Cardinals or it could be the 49ers. That's why I didn't put like Cardinals or Niners win at the very bottom, because I do think it's going to be way closer than what people have been saying, because of the fact that the Cardinals and the 49ers seem to always play like in that, like that rivalry where they're like the worst team plays up to the competition of the better team. If the Cardinals are 11-2 and the 49ers were 3-12, at that moment, the 49ers will just find a way to either ruin our day or make it closer. And, you know, it's been like that for like decades now. And the same thing goes for the Cardinals and the 49ers. That has happened where we were like the worst team out of the two, and we somehow ended up competing. But then again, there was last year where we just didn't even compete late in the season against the 49ers.
They competed embarrassing through the first half, I believe. If you're looking at the very first half of the Cardinals and the Niners, it was a 17-10 game at the half. And James Conner had that touchdown that brought it where it was a 14-10 game. No one picked the Cardinals to be able to win with Colt McCoy. Robbie Gould hits a field goal. And then, of course, it was just the big play from Debo in the second half, and the Niners started running it up at least. And then in the second game, it was 13-21. So you're basically talking about a one-score game. And then it was just a 17-point third quarter. Basically, it just at that point turned into the let's celebrate J.J. Watt, even though it's in the Niners stadium type of a game where Arizona was running, you know, quarterback three out there. But like you said, they've kept it competitive through the first half of every game they've played in the last couple of years against San Fran. And if they can do that through this first half, maybe turn that into positive momentum and keep it a close game, that's going to be the big win, I think, for Arizona, is keeping that close.
That's why the big key has to be about like focusing on making sure that they don't run the ball on us effectively. If they don't run the ball on us effectively, they can pretty much take away that whole under center where the linebackers have to drop in and vacate that middle zone, because Kyle Shanahan has made it a career to be able to attack that middle of the field. It's even gone as far as Mike McDaniel taking that to the Dolphins, which, I mean, I've said about as much as I can about Vance Joseph when it came to like his defensive
middle of the scheme field.
His middle of the field was wide open. And I just saw a breakdown video about how do you give up 70 points? And that was the key. They just kept leaving the middle of the field open, and he kept attacking that middle of the field. So Brock Purdy has been mentioned to be a better version of what was the other quarterback that they had before that?
Jimmy Garoppolo was one of those. Yeah, and he they were able to win a game, but they always had like day three, day seven, other picks when it wasn't Jimmy G. They just had not really gotten the quarterback spot together. When they had Jimmy and when they've had Brock, they've had honestly like one of the better coaching records in the league. When it was Trey Lance or it was any of the other backups, that they had like C.J. Beathard that comes to mind, they really struggled. Yeah. And I agree with you on the Vance Joseph defense. The more I watched and really was able to break down what went wrong, there were similarities, I think, to the Cardinals-Panthers game a few years ago. People forget that the Cardinals went on the road, I think, in This would be 2020. They ended up getting blown out by the Panthers and Teddy Bridgewater. That was the game Buda Baker did not play. And what's interesting is when you look at this last game, Justin Simmons doesn't play for the Broncos. And we've seen before that Vance has essentially tried to attack different players as far as trying to cover the edges, avoid big plays, and you'd spam over the middle. I think that part of the success we saw with Vance Joseph, when he had capable safeties, the defense has kind of functioned where they're fine. They don't limit the big plays. They end up being able to at least get some pressure. But if you're so reliant on a safety to have to, like, cover up for all of your mistakes, that once that safety's gone, you're just wide open over the middle. That, I think, has led to part of why Cardinals fans are more excited about this coaching staff, where it's not about the talent helping the coach versus the coach scheming that talent into the right spot.
Yeah, exactly. And there were some players that actually – I mentioned this about Hassan Reddick. Hassan Reddick made his life a lot easier when it came to a scheme, because he actually had a linebacker that can drop into coverage and not just like spot drop, but actually like pattern match, where he's actually – in man coverage against a tight end, and he's capable, or just being able to get out in the flat and defend that running back, where once he lost Hassan Reddick and he didn't have that guy, he had to rotate between Marcus Golden, Chandler Jones, and just anybody else who was a defensive end who was not capable. Like, and it's not a knock on them. That's not their fault that they can't, like, defend wide receivers. You don't expect them to do that, but they're put in situations where they're, like, not there to succeed. But, hey, Blake, can you you're able to see the screen, right? Because I can't, I don't have any feedback.
We got your pulled. Okay. We got you pulled up here.
Awesome. All right, cool. I just wanted to double check and make sure. So this was my favorite play of the reason why is because I just love the discipline that Kaiser White shows in this play over here. So before this, I have to give it to Cam Thomas. Cam Thomas had back-to-back, like, disruptive plays. One for a loss and one at the line of scrimmage. The way he was able to slip through that line of scrimmage was just, it's magnificent. And I can't wait for him to, like, continue to ascend. So essentially in this play right here, you see the outside receiver, which is, I would guess this would be the X. He's opposite of the, well, you don't have a trips right here, but this is a 2x2 formation.
No, can you share your window here real quick? Two. It looks like, I think you opened it in a different window as far as the picture, at least for that. So. Let's see if you can
I see. It's not coming up over here. Wait, what the heck? Okay, you know what? What I'm going to do is I'm going to probably...
You should be able to add it again, I think, at least here in a second. Otherwise, I've got a play I can show at least from the Niners end while you're getting that pulled up. Let me know when you're ready.
Now, I'm over here describing things, and it's like, wait, what is he talking about? It should be ready for present.
I've got the still the same spot, at least for the most part. The videos. There we go. Where I see you. Boom. All righty.
There we go. So what I love about this play is that, as I mentioned, we're going to see the end zone angle. And, can I pause? Yep, I can pause it. Thank God. I was wondering if I could even control this. Now I know. So obviously you see Kaiser White just in the middle of the formation. You got your outside defenders. And what I love is what he does here is he reads what the wide receiver is going to do. So the wide receiver is motioning towards the inside right around here. So he releases and he's trying to attack that middle part. Because Kaiser White vacates that middle part of the field right here in the end zone, it makes it look as if that look is going to come wide open. Kaiser White shifts outside and comes back towards the middle, completely reading Dak Prescott's eyes. When he shifts back to the middle, there's the ball's already in the air. So that was a great read by Kaiser White. And I can't mention how doing that type of, like, having that type of a play and the impact it gave us, where it basically just closed the game out. We hadn't seen much of that in the past 4 years with the last organization, where it came down to, like, a game-winning interception, with the exception of maybe one or two games that I could think at the top of my head and stuff. But, like, that really gets me excited when it comes to, like, the knowledge of these defenders, what they're being coached to do, the type of basic reads that they're being taught to make sure they pick up on. And that's the type of stuff that can lead to defenses being, like, going from being bad to being like not only good, but they can also be great when you add the talent or when the talent starts to flourish. So that's my first play.
Second, I was going to say, before you moved on, I did want to say one thing real quick that's awesome is the discipline, I think, that shows up in that play. Because, said, Kaiser moves toward, like you said, the play design where the running back is there. So at least it's not like he's baiting, I think, Dak Prescott fully. You look at it, he's keeping his eyes disciplined on where the back is. And then once he sees at least, all right, so I've got this coverage here. And then immediately he knows to drop back in and cover that zone. Whether that's coaching as far as being able to design a trap like that, or in a lot of different ways, some of it is just not getting sucked into the run, being able to make sure that once you know that that play is faked, being able to be in the right spot. I do think that some of what he did there was ultimately recognizing that the Cowboys love a lot of those slant and crossing patterns in the red zone. So being able to have players in the middle of the field and staying disciplined for that was something he did. And it ends up being essentially maybe not the... for sure game-winning play, because the Cowboys were still down 28-16 at that point. Even if they score, they'd have to go for two, and then they'd have to kick the field goal like to tie it, because Arizona was able to get that long touchdown, or that long, excuse me, pass to Michael Wilson, and then the touchdown to Hollywood Brown. But it basically ended the game.
Yeah, pretty much. And he noticed that the wide receiver was coming towards the middle, and he just backed off and went back to his, middle zone. At that point, you don't call it like the middle of the field. Mm-hmm. You just pretty much just call it the middle of the end zone because of how close you are. But of course, here's the second play that I'm going to bring up. It's the Michael Wilson bomb. I love this. So this is more like I went back and forth with someone on Twitter about this, on X. This is more of a concept that has been called in the Cliff Kingsbury type of, I'm not saying the playbook. But when you have these two wide receivers running basically deep slants, crossing each other and whatnot, this was more of like the defense breaking down for the Cowboys than it was just like a brilliant play design. But of course, you got to give credit to the play because it put those defenders in conflict. So once they both release, they both cross each other's, obviously their vicinity. There's nobody picking up Michael Wilson. He's completely wide open. So I always thought to myself, did they know this, that they know where they were going to attack this whole time? Well, look, Michael Wilson is just right off the line of scrimmage. He gets bumped by the slot, the apex defender. The apex goes and guards the flat. And now Michael Wilson is just attacking that middle, going across the field, and he's completely wide open. The safety obviously notices pretty late and is there to basically contain and make sure that Michael Wilson doesn't get a touchdown out of this. Or else if it wasn't for that safety, he goes the whole entire way for a touchdown. And this was, once again, not only do I like this coming from this organization and this coaching staff, but I love how aggressive we're being when it comes to our offense. And that's what we need to do in this game. We need to go away from being conservative, because this play came in the second half. We didn't see anything like that against the Giants in the second half. We need to continue with the intensity.
Yep, and that's where I think I agree with you on what they learned from the mistake of the Giants game was you do have to be able to find a way to still have an explosive play to be able to not just get into field goal range, but part of it is you had to continue doing effective jobs at running the ball. Here you can see that they did the play fake. It shows how important I think it is to not just have a strong run game, but even being able to have a play fake like that where they're able to move the pocket at least with that, which is really the coolest part, because you take all of those Dallas edge rushers, you look at where Micah Parsons is, he gets sucked up into the run game. You have a second guy out there. It gives just enough time to be able to get the ball over. And what someone described this as is this is a modern offense in the NFL. This is where you see a pre-snap motion with Rondale Moore. He's able to identify at least that they've got zone coverage that's happening here. And when they do end up in that position, you end up with a nice pocket for him. He can step up in here. You see the linebackers, at least, they were sold on biting on the run fake. You end up seeing in this spot, at least, that safety down there, he ends up not recognizing. Like you said, he takes the angle. He follows Rondale Moore, expecting a deep shot there. They then take that coverage and move it with a crossing route. It's I think a scissors concept is probably one of the ways you would look at it, where you have the sail route, but then the two of the guys cross each other. This is what a modern NFL offense does, is it basically pulls different defenders into having to guard the same areas of the field so that you know that a player is going to be open on that other end of the field. And that was ultimately, if you had to pick one single thing that won the game, it was this, because at this point, 21-16. If the Cardinals go three and out on this drive or don't end up punting it back to the Cowboys, Cowboys take a touchdown, they go and take the lead. Even if they kick a field goal, Arizona suddenly has to be able to go and put points up on the board to be able to, either whether it's a field goal, then you still can lose to a touchdown, or the Cowboys could kick it and win it. That's something that I think that we've been able to see with this Cardinals coaching staff. It was a good adjustment from the week before.
See, one of the things that I just noticed that I really have to point out is Josh Dobbs moving away. He kind of moves the pocket right here, and then he sets his feet. So that's a very, very good trait when it comes to like modern offenses with QBs needing to move the pocket, mostly because of the fact that it can give better angles to be able to protect. Because you see Micah Parsons being taken here one-on-one. The angle that he has to now have to take to get to Josh Dobbs has been changed because of his positioning. So that's number one. So that's a good thing that that I want to continue to see from the Cardinals quarterbacks. Another thing is
this. He's looping outside, and that's where you got Micah Parsons, at least, is the only one who's rushing on that side. And you still have a guy who can block him, but ultimately you basically ran the ball away from Micah Parsons, but you faked it, and then you ran back toward to the point where, like you said, it's a really good design as far as being able to it's not quite a naked bootleg, but like you said, the idea of a moving pocket and being able to move your quarterback and then throw back across. That's been something we've seen from the Cardinals as a concept this whole season, where they've had these throwback passes. They had a similar setup to Hollywood Brown on a sail route, I believe, against the Giants earlier. That's something that I think we can see as a staple of their offense. You can see how it's been able to use to attack a defense like the Cowboys by getting their safety to run to the right, and then the wide receiver crosses, runs back across the field the other side.
And here's one more point about like what I like about these new philosophies and whatnot. And this is what Kyle Shanahan, I asked my friend Alex Rollins about, like, when it comes to overloading, the defense and whatnot. So what he's talking about is when you see Rondale Moore motion this is a boundary to the play side. No, that's not the play side. That's field side. So when he's motioning, you had a 2x3 formation. You had a wide receiver, a tight end, and a running back on the field side. Then on the boundary, you had your two wide receivers. Once you move that wide receiver over, he became the new number one on the field side. And so when it comes to like these new defenses, if you're in zone, that completely changes what the assignments are for each defender. Because at that point, obviously, you see the most outside defender, which is a corner at the very bottom of the screen. Now he's responsible for Rondale Moore. This other apex defender, I believe that's number two, his responsibility is now to pick up the new number two on this side. Well, he goes in defensive flat, which is where Rondale Moore, ran basically his concept out. And so both of these defenders were, one of them did correctly picked up Rondale Moore. The other one defended the flat when there was nobody defending that side. Essentially, they faked the handoff, of course, to James Conner. He runs in, he's more of a person to protect, and Michael Wilson is just wide open.
Yep, definitely. That's really fun there. I got to play at least real quick just to show a three sequencing for the Niners. And I think you had did you have a Nick Bosa play? I think you wanted to go over. I think we talked about off air. No, not yet.
No, all right, well, I decided.
I know we also were knowing that at least if we're going to show Nick Bosa off, it would just be sad because it'd remind Cardinals fans of the Nick Bosa possibility, at least they could have had if things had been a little bit different from that. So. Yeah. All right. So one of the concepts that we see here, and this is partially like the Steve Wilks defense, you can see here, they're basically running what looks to be a, if it's not cover three, you got one safety high. They're showing a run look. They are running the off tackle, which is basically like a staple of most of what you see from these kind of modern NFL offenses, where you're able to, trying to see if you can get Nick Bosa inside, being able to see if you can then kind of run against the pass rusher and use that strength against him. Bosa does a great job of holding up the edge here. He basically is, when you're talking about being able to see that bootleg or fake, he's watching, studying the quarterback. He's able to force the running back to get upfield outside. You can see at least how disciplined they are between him and Fred Warner. You'd say normally there'd be a gap to squeeze through, but you've got a Giants offensive lineman, like literally tries to do the cut block on this play. He's not able to make it. And so then as a result, the running back is having to go outside. Normally, you'd want to see if you can get a good block to be able to cut up field. But this right here with their left guard at least is able to get free. The center, I believe, for them is the guy who falls down, who's supposed to be the blocker. So this is something where you're just talking about a really good defensive line. This is this is the guy that they signed off of the Steelers, at least on this side. You've got Teron Armstead. They're solid players right there. They're just Hargrave, that's right. Yeah, they're just so aggressive up front that he just basically is able to run past for the most part, at least, and get some of that penetration. The right guard, as you can see here, is taking on Dre Greenlaw and Teron Armstead. He tries to cut block Armstead, doesn't end up succeeding. You now have an equal number of bodies, at least, where as far as the blockers go, it's on the linebacker here to make the tackle. And you can see here, he's got to be able to make the edge. Nick Bosa does a great job of forcing him to run more to the side route. And he had a linebacker waiting right there for him. They're able to get a tackle for loss on the play. You then look at least here with how this play looks from the Giants side. And you can kind of really see like what the play design was. And ultimately, the linebackers, especially being their stars, Warner and Bosa, unlike one Cowboys player who got sucked upfield in Micah Parsons, they're able to make a solid play. Now, this is kind of where the Giants were able to dice up the Cardinals in the second half. This is a run for Daniel Jones all the way. Like, they move a guy in motion trying to be able to pull a player from here to the other side of the field and then run Daniel Jones into that. You can at least see where he gets a few yards, but ultimately, 57 and Dre Greenlaw, he's got closing speed and is able to go and make that tackle. That's one of the things as far as for where this Niners defense really makes its living. It's up front in forcing teams into these really tough situations. So here you'll watch 57 and Dre Greenlaw. He's going through. They move the running back over. He's just following and reading the quarterback all the way. He's got the quickness to be able to run up. Daniel Jones tries to get to the outside block. And this is something where you credit at least Steve Wilks. He's a defensive backs coach. They're at least able to have a guy who's keeping contained on the outside. So if Jones tries to get upfield, he's not going to end up getting as much of a play there. That's just a disciplined defense. We've talked about this with the Cardinals, how when you're able to have guys that aren't necessarily biting on some of those different run plays, or that you're at least coached up to know that a quarterback is going to be running. What happens here, at least on the next play, though, shows you kind of the difference between why the Cardinals were giving up so many plays, at least to Daniel Jones in the second half, versus with this being a Niners team. It's still obviously a one touchdown game. They're showing essentially a zero blitz look, or showing at least like just almost everyone's in the line. They've got one guy back. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys that are here on the line. And you see them, they rush 5, as Steph talked about, at least for the most part. But here they actually only end up rushing 1, 2, 3, 4 players. They end up keeping one guy who's here essentially just spying on Daniel Jones to watch him as far as between him and the running back. And they're still able to get pressure with just 4. So that is, I think, the key for the most part is what the Cardinals got pressure with 4. They're having to do similar plays of rushing or dropping back. Here you're in a place where there's really nowhere to go with the football. You're seeing they're clearly trying to get a two-man route here to the side that's then seeing at least a guy that you're hoping to get in the wide receiver wide open. Niners, of course, are able to blow up this play because they're not able to get that same protection that they were used to. Teron Armstead, Javon Hargrave are just able to get there. And Nick Bosa, at least coming around the edge, he senses the pressure, bails out to the right. And the corners, at least for the most part, there's no guy who's able to truly get separation that's out over here. You can see how even with this mix-up, the receiver and Slayton, he kind of ends up just kind of trying to run it to the outside corner. He probably needs to run this thing upfield, even with the safety, to make some use. Looks like they're trying to get open for DJ. There is just a lot of spots where, at least whatever the breakdown was, you've got 4 Niners over here and only 3 receivers. So one of the ways that you break down, which is when you can get pressure with just 4, you keep 7 guys out there in the secondary discipline. That's, I think, the key for the Cardinals, is they're going to have to find a way to get this safety to drop down into the box against their run game, or be able to have enough time with protections in the pocket, moving things around, where the Niners have to rush 5 and then get that one guy open. Otherwise, if the Niners are able to get pressure on Josh Dobbs by rushing 4 and keeping 7 dropped, and Dobbs is having to run around in the pocket, it's going to be a long day for him and the Cardinals, just like it was a long day for Daniel Jones and the Giants.
It's really going to come down. So the philosophy when it came to defending the run before, as we know, it was boxing the run in. So we had our edges set, hard edges to force the run to go inside, because that's a way to defend an outside zone concept, because outside zone is just trying to get that corner, that edge, and then obviously reading from the outside in. But it was the fact of the matter was that, like, they would just run it down the middle anyway. So setting those wide, like, edges only made them attack the gaps within the inside. And our, you know, when it came to our, like, defensive tackles and our linebackers at that point, instead of filling in the gaps, he would supplement, like, a blitz on the way to the quarterback situation, or a blitz on the way to the running back circumstance, where you're just reading for any open gaps. And if you're a linebacker, I mean, you're reading a gap, whether if it's cloudy or clear. If it's cloudy, then you move on to the next gap. It put too much, it overloaded their minds when it came to, like, being gap sound. So now what I'm hoping is what the Cardinals should implement is what the 49ers implemented when it came to, like, defending the run and pushing it to the outside, spilling and killing. That's what it's called. So you stay disciplined on your gaps in the interior, and you push the run and you force it outside, where you're hopefully your defensive ends or your outside linebackers are setting good edges, not hard edges, good edges, where they're not shooting up the field. They're just maintaining their position where it's at to make the running back go to the outside, so that the linebackers can go ahead. The linebackers, the safeties, the corners can go ahead and kill the run on the outside. So it's going to be a big day for Kaiser White. We're going to need a big day from Kaiser and Chris Barnes, especially as well as the safeties as well, who are playing in the very back end. Because if this is going to be a situation where they're going to try to attack us with the run to be able to set up Brock Purdy on those wide open, like, looks downfield, they're going to have to take that weapon away from the 49ers, which they have been using against us to a lot of success. You're muted.
Yeah. With this week's injury report, Jonathan Ledbetter being out, that's just something that's unfortunate. I think we're going to end up seeing, at least also, like you said, Josh Woods has been out for another game. Chris Barnes, it's going to be a big game for him. He's played very well. The big thing that'll be interesting is Paris Johnson Jr. being limited, because Nick Bosa is a guy who can line up on either the right tackle side or the left tackle side. I was really hoping that you'll be able to see Paris be able to give it full go, so we'll see how they're able to adjust for that. Keontae Ingram also didn't practice on Friday. He's hurt. We'll see potentially more Rondale Moore, I wonder, for a couple of runs in the backfield. But it just feels like the Cardinals are kind of coming into this game where, even though both sides are not coming in with a full deck, there's just been so many injuries to Arizona's defensive line, like you said, that being able to spill at least to running in there and then kind of pushing the run to the outside. I think that you're going to have to clog the lanes at that point, which would mean that it's going to be up to your corners are going to have to be able to man up in one-on-one routes against probably a Brandon Ayuk, maybe a Deebo Samuel for the most part. This is just going to be one of those games, I think, where your hope is honestly going to be trying to fool Brock Purdy into giving the ball to you, getting off to a quick start so you can run the ball on this Niners team, keep your quarterback in a balanced offense. If they're not able to do that, that's where I think it could get ugly. I think the question is going to be, is this Cardinals team going to make it competitive enough in the second half where they can keep it close with a good game plan in the first half, avoid turnovers, force one to Brock Purdy? That's where I think. So even though I still have the Niners, I think, winning this game, and like I said, when I picked against Arizona last week, they did come out and get the win against the Cowboys. I do think that if we end up seeing enough adjustments from them to make it close, that will be a positive sign for Cardinals fans that what maybe is not a current win to the Niners at this point, like you said, it could be 27-24. It could be like the Cards are able to steal another win. At least you feel like that they're going to be competitive, hopefully, against this Niners team, one of the best in the NFL for the future.
Absolutely. That's all I'm praying for is competitive football. I do not want to see a situation where we have to turn off the game by the second half. And we're talking about this on Monday being like, well, the Cardinals are right back in the slums, because right now, the way that we feel after the first three games of the season, we're feeling very positive about this team. We're feeling like a lot of, you know, the national media had just, you know, bestowed the whole tanking title on us. They're going to go for Caleb. If not, they're going to go for Marvin Harrison. It's like, I don't think so, man. I mean, I would love to have Marvin Harrison Jr., but we're not that team that the media is constantly iterating, saying that we're just trying to tank out there.
Yeah.
We didn't get the memo, and neither did the Cardinals last week.
Yeah, they didn't last week. We'll see how their schedule goes, because I do think the rest of the league is going to be on notice with the Cardinals now, because last week a lot of what we talked about was not just the Cardinals being able to be a good team and being able to come out with a solid game plan and executing, especially in the second half. But they end up getting the Bengals next week. Joe Burrow's been beat up, but that defense is good. They play Stafford and the Rams and then the Seahawks. Like, if you're able to kind of get two wins or so, and then we start talking about late October, that's around the time that we could potentially, I think, look at Kyler Murray coming back. If you're at a 2-6 team by that point, that's going to be, I think, we're maybe 2-5 by that point. You're going to then get at least a bunch of tough teams, as far as you're going to play the Browns and their defense, the Falcons rushing attack, and this Cardinals team is, you know, not been the best at stopping the run, but it's a rookie QB. And then you've got the Texans. I think the biggest thing, at least, Marcos, is this may not be a team that's pushing for the playoffs, depending on when Kyler comes back, because we still want to see how he's going to look. But you could end up talking about this team that is no longer in the tank conversation, and then Kyler comes back. I think that would be kind of considered a win for most Cardinals fans, considering we expected for them to be, you know, a team that at least where the wins were coming from against this Myers, the Bengals, you know, looking at where the Rams and maybe the Seahawks as far as the team went. I think that even if you end up being just a one-win team heading to that point, if you're able to then capitalize and see this team come out strong and see a boost to their offense with Kyler, that's going to be something I think that's an advantage heading in, where there's some very winnable games down the stretch against a bad Steelers offense, a Bears team for Christmas Eve. And we'll see where it goes. If the Cardinals do drop this game and then we end up seeing them essentially, maybe not exposed, but teams kind of adjust to them over the next few games, maybe more guys get hurt, maybe Buddha's still not back yet. That's where I think you start talking about teams are going to kind of start writing the Cardinals off, at least, because I think you'll get more of those losses against the Giants where Cardinals came out, they competed super hard in the first half, couldn't make it up in the second half. We'll see exactly how the narrative of this team is written, because as we saw last week, this ink ain't dry on this Cardinals franchise just yet. All right.
Like I said, let's hope for a good Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're hoping for that victory Monday. You told me that the Cardinals would be 2-2 and that the wins would be against the two playoff teams. I don't think anyone would have believed it. Let's hope that your 27-24 score comes up. This has been the Redbird Reboot, at least. I'm Blake, that's Marcos. Thank you guys again for tuning in so much. We'll talk to you guys next week, reviewing hopefully what's a Cardinals win, or at the very least, Cardinals putting up a very competitive game against a fearsome 49ers front. Take care, everyone.